welcome to a Juno afternoon on Monday, October 20th, 2014. Scott Burton, your Monday host, in with you on the show today. City Manager Kim Kiefer will be in to tell us about tonight's City Assembly meeting. We'll talk with organizers about the Juno World Affair Council's Fall Forum, Mexico, Do Fences Make Good Neighbors? Planned Parenthood's Corey Stinnett will be here to highlight the upcoming workshop, Growing Up, All About Puberty. We'll talk with Kathleen McFerrin, certified trainer with the Center for Nonviolent Communication, about her workshop this weekend, Bridging the Communication Gap. And KXLL's Jesse Herman will be here to tell us about this year's Zombie Walk, plus Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more here on KTOO News. First, here's National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez in Anchorage, Alaska. Indigenous students are reclaiming culture through social media, especially when it comes to language. Malu Kito is an Indigenous education PhD student at the University of Hawaii, Manoa.
Social media is a very flexible as well as dynamic platform to empower communities. As language learners of Olelo Hawaii, Hawaiian language, we have used social media in order to strengthen our own language within contexts that matter to us.
Chris Ann Justice's high school students in Barrow, Alaska, are using social media to post pictures and describe them in Inupiaq. She says social media is something everyone is already using.
Language is for communication, and if we want to keep language alive, we need to make sure that we are using every avenue of communication that is actually in use. Every avenue of communication should be tapped if we're going to try to keep languages alive.
Justice says the students are becoming more comfortable using the language online and in the community. Justice and Kito were among attendees from across the U.S. at the National Indian Education Association's annual convention in Anchorage last week. Discussions included educational services for Native juveniles in the justice system. Frank Fastwolf's consulting group works with the Bureau of Indian Affairs to provide education in three detention centers to help maintain learning. He says young people often come in with grade levels anywhere between 3 to 5 years behind their actual grades.
If we can give them the tools to transition back, if we can help maintain their credit, they go back, they're able to keep going. You know, not having that academic credit when they go back to school, they're likely to be in the same situation they were earlier where they drop out or they don't go to school or they have difficulties.
Fastwolf says providing incarcerated juveniles education services is law included in the Tribal Law and Order Act.
These juveniles are someone's son or someone's daughter, that they deserve an education, regardless of their circumstances, where they're at. They deserve it, just like all the other students. Just because they're in juvenile detention for whatever circumstances, it doesn't disqualify them from receiving those services. And also that these guys actually wanted their education.
Fastwolf says when they're engaged in learning and given responsibilities, their time and energy produces positive outcomes. Other educators are focusing on getting more Native Americans in the classroom. Robert Cook is helping do that through Teach for America. He leads the Native Alliance and says Teach for America is in 48 regions across the country, including in 4 places that impact Native students: Oklahoma, South Dakota, New Mexico, and Hawaii.
Teachers that share the same background of the kids can really have a strong impact on outcomes for our students. And the opportunity is to know that there's mentors and people out there that have been able to go out and get a good education and come back to their communities.
Cook says sometimes there's a misconception about the teacher corps.
You know, when Teach for America was launched, people thought that Teach for America, you know, recruited from these elite colleges. They were mostly white teachers coming to, you know, inner city schools or rural areas, didn't know a lot about the communities. And so, but this year in our recruitment of 5,500 teachers, half of them were from diverse backgrounds.
Today, there are about 100 Native teachers. NIEA's new president, Melvin Monette, was sworn in Saturday as the conference wrapped up. In his address, he spoke about his family's commitment to education and the combined efforts of educators past and present across the country.
Only through your outreach and our efforts did we achieve the national focus on students. But now we must work to ensure those federal promises of educational excellence are realized.
Next year's gathering will be held in Portland. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. And by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C.
If you are a Native American, there's one simple thing you can do to help your elders, help young people seeking an education, and help develop Native business. Go out and vote on November 4th. Voting on Election Day makes a difference in Washington, D.C. and at home. Go to nativenews.net for more information. Brought to you by the Carnegie Corporation of New York and Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, October 20th, 2014. In the studio with me now is City Manager Kim Kiefer. Kim, nice to see you.
Nice to see you, too.
Nice surprise.
Thank you for seeing me.
It's great to see you. So tonight's assembly meeting, what's going on?
Well, it's a transition. As people know, we just had an election, and it was certified last week. And so now, tonight, we'll have that change of assembly. So we'll thank the two outgoing assembly members, Carlton Smith and Randy Wanmaker, and we will welcome the two new ones and the one returning assembly member. So we'll welcome back Jesse Keel, and then we also will welcome Debbie White and Maria Gladyszewski, and they will be sworn in. And then there's the housekeeping piece that happens. So then the assembly votes on who the deputy mayor will be, and then they take their space. And that seat's always the seat right beside the mayor, and then the rest of the assembly members decide where they sit based on seniority.
Okay.
And then the mayor will determine what committees everybody serves on. So who will be on the Lands Committee, who will be on the Public Works and Facilities Committee, who will be on the Human Resources Committee, and then other committee assignments, and then who will chair those committees. So then he works that up as well. Sometimes he has it the night of. It really depends on who they elect for deputy, how everything else shakes out from that.
Okay, so if the public wanted to come tonight, it would be more as spectators.
Well, that's the beginning of the meeting, and it's also, like I said, an opportunity to thank the two outgoing assembly members. And they'll have a few opportunity to share some words, and we'll share some words with them. And then after all that's done, we go on to the regular business. So nothing like jumping right into it. So we'll start with the consent agenda, and then we've got items for public hearing. So just business as usual after that.
All right, and that starts at 7 o'clock
tonight. 7 o'clock in the assembly chambers.
All right, sounds good. And if you don't feel like going down in person, you can listen to it right here on KTOO-FM.
What a great service. Thank you.
Kim, thanks for coming in today.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon here on Monday, October 20th, 2014. And in the studio now is Dr. Richard Caulfield, Provost at UAS and also board member of JWAC. Welcome.
Thank you so much.
It's nice to have you here today. So we're going to talk about your forum this week, Mexico, Do Fences Make Good Neighbors? Question mark, right?
Right.
But before we get to that, why don't you tell us a little bit about JWAC in case there's anyone out there who hasn't seen you before.
Sure. The Juneau World Affairs Council, or JWAC, is an organization that's been here in Juneau for many years. It's focused on bringing really top-quality presentations to the community about world affairs and how Juneau and Southeast Alaska and Alaska generally are connected to the global economy, the global environment. And so we have a really dedicated board, people who volunteer entirely to prepare a presentation like the forum that's coming up, but also a series of pretty much monthly presentations during the winter months of insights about various parts of the world, people who've traveled to interesting places in the world and come back and give presentations. The forum in particular, though, is a partnership between the University of Alaska Southeast and the Juneau World Affairs Council. We're doing this every fall where we have a forum around a particular country or a particular theme. Last year we had one on Canada and the relationship between the United States and Canada, particular focus on Western Canada and Alaska. And then this year we have the one on the relationships between Mexico and the United States in the 21st century. So it's a very timely topic, and we've got some great presenters coming.
Absolutely. I noticed they start this Thursday out at the UAS Egan Lecture Hall. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah, so the presentations are entirely free, and the public is welcome to come. Starts this coming Thursday evening at 7 o'clock, 7 to 8:30, a presentation by Professor Carlos Gil from the University of Washington. He's a professor of history, and he's going to be talking about the historical relationship between the United States and Mexico.
Nice.
So it's a
foundational
great
piece,
foundational
right?
piece. If you don't have much background in understanding the history between Mexico and the United States, that will give you a terrific overview. And then on Friday afternoon, starting at 2 o'clock, our second session is a presentation by Victor Silverman from Pomona College, again, a professor of history. And he'll be talking about the U.S. and the U.S. and Mexico, how does the border define us? And that's followed later in the afternoon at 3:30 on a session relating to drought and the issues of transborder water between Mexico and the United States. So basically starting at 2 in the afternoon on Friday and extending until about 5 o'clock. And then on Friday evening, we have our regular evening at Egan session, and we've had some terrific evening at Egan sessions.
Absolutely.
Starting at 7 o'clock every Friday night during the fall. And this particular one is a presentation by Yolanda Cruz, and she's an award-winning Chatino filmmaker from Oaxaca, Mexico. And she is going to be presenting her film about art and migration in Mexican indigenous communities. And we're very excited about that. One of our faculty members, Andrea DeWeese, is a colleague of Yolanda Cruz's, and she recommended that we invite Ms. Cruz to join us here in Juneau. So we're excited about that. Again, that's 7 o'clock in the Egan Lecture Hall at the UAS campus.
Will there be an opportunity to ask the filmmaker questions afterwards?
Absolutely.
Great.
Yeah, there'll be a question and answer opportunity following that. And then the final day is actually Saturday, the 25th. Starting at 9 o'clock, a session that's called Who's Afraid of NAFTA, with apologies to Virginia Woolf, the North American Free Trade Agreement. We have a panel of Reginald Jones, Gary Huffbauer, senior fellow from the Peterson Institute for International Economics, who's coming to Juneau for this presentation, again at the Egan Lecture Hall. And then in the afternoon, starting at 1 o'clock, we have a final session called Weaving Community Bonds Through Mexico and the United States, Binational Ethnic Communities Experiences. And we have people from Juneau who are going to be joining us who have that experience of working across borders, have families across borders in Mexico and the United States, who will be part of a a panel talking about their experiences as well. So that's at 1 o'clock on Saturday afternoon.
Such a variety of speakers and events. Tell us a little bit how you all decide on these and how you actually facilitate this.
Well, I think a lot of the ideas emerge from the interests of the board members who are paying attention to what is going on around the world. And this year in particular, our former mayor, Bruce Vitello, who has strong ties to Mexico, suggested that this is a timely topic and one that we could capitalize on some of the speakers who are available to us. Jim Clark has been very active in the leadership of JWAC, so the board came together and decided that this year, Mexico, with all of our discussions about immigration, all of our discussions about cross-border transboundary water issues, mm-hmm. things of that nature, this was a timely session to offer this year to people here in Juneau.
Absolutely. And if you want to hear more about this or see the schedule in print, where should somebody go?
I'd invite you to go to the website, which is jwac.org, www.jwac.org. And the schedule is there and a lot more information about each of the presenters.
Absolutely. And just a reminder that this does kick off on Thursday night at 7 p.m. in the Egan Lecture Hall.
It's free and it's open to the public, so bring friends and family.
Looks like a great forum. Dr. Caulfield, thank you for coming in today. Is there anything we're missing? Anything you'd like to add?
No, I really appreciate the opportunity and hope we'll see a good turnout for the events.
All right, we'll see you out there.
support for programming on this station is provided by Dennis Egan, candidate for the Alaska State Senate in Juneau, Skagway, Haines, Gustavus, and Northern Southeast Alaska communities. Paid for by Dennis Egan for Senate.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon here on Monday, October 20th, 2014 on 104.3 FM here in your capital city. And today, now in the studio with me, is Ms. Corey Stinnett. Welcome to the show, Corey.
Thanks, Scott.
And you are the Community Outreach Educator and Teen Council Facilitator at Planned Parenthood.
I am, yes.
Sounds like a fun job.
It's a great job.
So tell us a little bit about Juneau Planned Parenthood, what you all do, and then we'll talk about these workshops that are coming up.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people are really familiar with the health services that Planned Parenthood offers. We are part of Planned Parenthood of the Great Northwest, which is based out of Seattle, and we've been serving the Juneau community with an array of health services for a little over 5 years now.
Okay.
So people can come in and get preventative health services, STD screenings, birth control services. We do cancer screenings. And so people can come in for quite an array of services. But in addition to that, we have our education work that we do.
Right. So. And again, we'll get to these sort of bigger workshops that are coming up. But you were telling me that you do some para-education on a weekly basis. Is that right?
I do. It's peer education.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, that's with the Juneau Teen Council. So
okay.
Teen Council is a nationally replicated program. And we started this up about 2 years ago here in Juneau. And it's an amazing group of young people. They're sophomores, juniors, and seniors, and they become peer educators in the community. We kick off the school year with a 3-day retreat,
mm-hmm.
and they get a lot of detailed information about healthy sexuality topics. And then throughout the school year, we meet once a week for about 2.5 hours, and they continue to receive a lot of training on various topics related, again, to healthy sexuality, and they also get presentation skills. So they develop into these amazing resources and
mm-hmm.
peer educators in our community for their friends, kind of in informal ways, and also informal presentations that they may do with fellow student groups, sometimes in classrooms. So it's a really amazing and inspiring program.
Yeah, that sounds excellent.
Yeah.
Okay, and then you have these other workshops coming up, these three major workshops maybe.
Yeah.
Let's talk about them.
Well, in addition to the Teen Council, I get to do a lot of outreach in the community, and one of my favorite parts of my job is these family programs. There are puberty workshops and then also workshops that are specifically for parents. And what we do in these workshops is we bring together parents and children. We create a pretty relaxed but professional atmosphere where we can talk about some of the changes that happen during puberty and really provide some accurate information about some of the physical and emotional changes and just stimulate that conversation between parents and kids and help them, clarify what their family values may be and start the conversation that's so important.
It's such a hard conversation to start, too, isn't it?
It can be for a lot of people. And so we are here to support parents and support kids in that.
Well, that sounds like a nice workshop. That's on this Wednesday.
It is. This Wednesday we have the Growing Up Female Workshop, and this is for parents and daughters. And the age range for the daughters is 9 to 12 years old. And that's this Wednesday, October 22nd. We have been able to do these the last couple of years at the Juneau Family Health and Birth Center. So we're really appreciative for that great space that they have.
And remind us where that is?
That's at 1601 Salmon Creek Lane, so kind of up, near the hospital behind the search building.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so that's this Wednesday.
That is this Wednesday. So parents and daughters this Wednesday, October 22nd. We start at 5:45, and we end promptly at 8:15. We know that's a late night for people during the school week. And then the following Wednesday, on October 29th, we will offer our Growing Up Male workshop. So this is for parents and their sons, again, who are 9 to 12 years old.
Okay. Yeah. And then finally, there is the Let's Talk Parent caregiver workshop.
We do, right? And that one's a little different. Okay. Actually, October is Let's Talk Month, where sexuality educators across the country are really, you know, putting forth effort even more than we usually do to support parents in talking with their kids. And this is really a workshop for parents to come together, talk about some of the issues that they may see going on with their kids, and focus on their communication skills, helping them really get across the values that they want to share with their kids around boundaries, around healthy decision making. So that is it's a really good chance for parents to, you know, kind of come together, hear what other parents are going through, know they're not the only ones, problem solve, and then we really provide some really great resources.
So that November 5th one, are kids and teens invited to that too?
No, okay. That one really is more for parents to come to.
So I know you've done these in the past. Tell us what they look like.
Yeah. Well, I would say in Juneau, we've probably had somewhere in the range of 85 parents and children go through these workshops in about the past 2 years. And for the puberty workshops, I will say at the beginning, parents come in, they're a little nervous. The kids, you know, sometimes are pretty petrified that their parents have brought them to a puberty workshop.
Where are we going, Dad?
Yeah.
We're going to go to a workshop.
What are we going to do? Yeah. And so it's kind of awkward and funny in the beginning. And, you know, we put some music on, and we usually serve a meal, a light meal and light snacks. And really take the opportunity to just break the ice on the topic of puberty. We will give an overview of puberty. We watch the video. It's nice to have, you know, everyone can focus in on the video for a few moments to really get in on some of the topics. And then we do some activities where the parents and the kids actually break up separately. So I have some really great volunteers that work with me in this program. And oftentimes we'll separate, give the parents some support. The kids get a chance to maybe draw out some of these things that happen during puberty to kind of just release some of that tension and get creative with it. We come back together. Kids get to ask anonymous questions, so questions that they might not want to ask out loud. They actually write them down.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and we address those questions in a really safe environment. And then we usually split up again, have another little discussion with the kids where they get to ask questions, you know, maybe that they didn't ask in the anonymous questions or they didn't want to ask right in front of their parents at that moment. And by this time is when you really see the shift happening. The kids aren't as nervous anymore. Parents are usually relieved. And then in the end, we come back together and we provide some resources that are conversation starters, kind of like little interview booklets, questions for kids to ask their parents, and then some questions for parents to ask their kids that are, you know, around the topics of healthy development, healthy sexuality. So it could be something as easy as, hey, mom, when was your first date? Or something like that. You know,
sure.
Just something really basic to get them talking. So by the end of the workshop, the children and the parents find a spot in the room, and they have about 15 minutes to really get into some conversation, talk about what just happened. And it's an amazing and a beautiful transformation to see that happen between parents and kids.
I bet you say you've seen probably 85 sets of parents and or 85 kids and parent combos.
Yeah, kids and parent combos, about 85 over the past 2 years.
And what are some things they're saying to you on their way out?
Thank you. I get a lot of thank yous. Uh-huh. I get some kids who just kind of smile and they're still ready to get out of there.
Right.
you know, I think I had one kid say, well, my mom said she would buy me a bunny if I came to this. And seriously, so I'm like, well, whatever it takes to get the conversation started. A lot of gratitude and a lot of thank you. And, you know, we do evaluations and have just gotten some really great evals. I actually have one right here. Can I read this?
Please do.
Okay. This was from a Juneau parent participant. I can tell you firsthand that the workshops we did have made a huge difference in receiving and delivering info with my son. As he hit sixth grade and went to middle school, the whole world of puberty, his or others, has hit, and he has found an open space to talk with me about things. I have to thank you for providing that needed link at just the right time.
Wow.
Yeah. That's
thoughtful words.
That's one of the most thoughtful, powerful ones I think we've received. But really, a lot of, I also see parents. I mean, it's Juno, so you'll see the parents that have been in workshops or see kids who have participated in workshops, and oftentimes parents will come back and just tell me, hey, that made a difference. Like, we can talk about these things a little easier now.
Yeah. Jeff Brown just passed me a question from a listener who called in, and I think it's probably for this first workshop that's this Wednesday. This is the parent-daughter workshop,
right?
And the question is, are males invited?
Male parents are absolutely invited. So the participant daughters, we do really kind of focus on some of the female aspects of growing up, but I really appreciate that question because we know that there are all kinds of different families. So, you know, fathers or caretakers would definitely be invited to bring their daughters.
Wow. Well, these workshops, facilitators for communication about a tough topic.
Mm-hmm.
The first one's this Wednesday at 5:45 at the Juno Family Health and Birth Center. The next one is Wednesday, October 29th, a week from this Wednesday, right?
That's right.
And is that next one? I guess it's a week later, too, on Wednesday.
It's a week later on that Wednesday.
Yeah, the 5th.
We do have a suggested donation of $25 a family for the puberty workshops. It's $10 suggested donation for the Let's Talk. We don't ever want to turn anyone away for that. That's why it's a suggested donation.
Okay.
So it's what people can do there. But, you know, space is limited. And we really need to have at least 6 families to do this workshop in the way that it's designed. But that space is also limited to about 10 to 12 families total. So it's right in that window. So pre-registration is required.
Okay. And where should somebody go to do that?
Yeah. Someone can call me at 209-7051. And again, that's 209-7051. Or I have a really long email, but I'll go ahead and do it. I can also be emailed at Corey.Stennett, so that's Corey.Stennett, S-T as in Tom, E-N-N-E-T-T, at ppgnw.org. So that's like Planned Parenthood Great Northwest, ppgnw.org.
And I suspect if they Googled Planned Parenthood in Juneau, they could find your contacts there too, right?
They can absolutely find my contact information there. I don't actually have the website set up for these specific events, but they could find my contact information, absolutely.
Sounds good. Well, Corey, thank you so much for coming in today and telling us about these workshops you're going to facilitate. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
I think that is it. Thanks a lot for having me today.
Oh, you're welcome.
It's the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 20th of October, 2014. It's the birthday of Ferdinand Joseph Lamenth, born in New Orleans, 1890, Jelly Roll Morton. Great piano player, apprenticed in the bars and brothels of New Orleans, wearing a turquoise coat, a Stetson hat, and tight striped pants. From New Orleans, moved on to the West Coast and Chicago, he wrote King Porter Stomp, Black Bottom Stomp, the original Jelly Roll Blues. He was one of the first to go beyond improvisation to write down jazz tunes, and so he claimed to be the founder of jazz. It was on this day, 1811, the steamboat entitled the New Orleans left Pittsburgh and headed down the Ohio and then the Mississippi to New Orleans. 82 days, 981 miles. They paved the way for commercial trade along the river. It's the birthday of the architect Sir Christopher Wren, born in Wiltshire, England, 1632, buried in St. Paul's Cathedral under the epitaph, "Reader, if you seek his monument, look around." It's the birthday of the poet Arthur Rimbaud, born in 1854 in Charleville, France, who said, "Genius is the recovery of childhood at will." The educator John Dewey, Burlington, Vermont, 1859, author of Democracy and Education. John Dewey said, "Give the pupils something to do, not something to learn, and the doing is of such a nature as to demand thinking. Learning naturally results." It's the birthday of Art Buchwald, the satirist, Mount Vernon, New York, 1925, who said, "If you attack the establishment long enough and hard enough, they will make you a member of it." And the poet Robert Pinsky, Long Branch, New Jersey, 1940, translator of Dante's Inferno, Robert Pinsky, who said, "Whatever makes a child want to glue macaroni on a paper plate and paint it and see it on the refrigerator, that has always been strong in me." Here's a poem for today by Lawrence Robb, "My Life Before I Knew It." I liked rainy days when you didn't have to go outside and play. At night, I'd tell my sister there were snakes under her bed. When I mowed the lawn, I imagined being famous. Cautious and stubborn, unwilling to fail, I knew for certain what I didn't want to know. I hated to dance, I hated baseball, and collected airplane cards instead. I learned to laugh at jokes I didn't get. The death of Christ moved me, but only at the end of Ben-Hur. I thought Henry Mancini was a great composer. My secret desire was to own a collie who would walk with me in the woods when the leaves were falling, and I was thinking about writing the stories that would make me famous. Sullen, overweight, melancholy, writers didn't have to be good at sports. They stayed inside for long periods of time. They often wore glasses. But strangers were moved by what they accomplished and wrote them letters. One day, one of those strangers would introduce herself to me, and then the life I'd never been able to foresee would begin, and everything before I became myself would appear necessary to the rest of the story." A poem by Lawrence Robb, "My Life Before I Knew It," from The Probable World, published by Penguin, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity.com, a brain training program designed by neuroscientists that has been used by 50 million people worldwide. More at Lumosity.com. And by Arizona State University, with more than 70 campus degrees now available 100% online at online.asu.edu. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Support for programming on this station is provided by Sam Keto, Democratic candidate for State House. Paid for by Sam Keto for State House.
And you're listening to KTOO FM 104.3 here in the capital city. And with me in the studio now is Darcy Lockhart. Darcy, welcome.
Thank you very much, Scott.
Nice to have you. And on the phone is Kathleen McFerrin. Welcome, Kathleen.
Thanks, Scott.
Nice to have you on the show. So we're going to be talking about NVC, or nonviolent communication, today. We were just talking, Darcy, about how you found Kathleen and this group that you have here in town. Darcy, why don't you start by telling us a little bit about your group and how this all came to be?
Well, gosh, I think it's about 4 or 5 years ago that I took a workshop from Kathleen that was sponsored by AWARE.
Okay.
And then, which was just, I was just totally enamored with it, and Kathleen is an excellent, you know, teacher, so... Then I ended up taking a 5-day mediation workshop with her in Washington State, and then, you know, subsequently every year she's come back to do workshops with us. And I facilitate a workshop, I mean, it's a practice group that happens twice a month for 2 hours, and there's about 10 of us that meet regularly, and practice this new language of compassionate communication.
Okay. And Kathleen, do you remember meeting Darcy how many years ago? Was that the first time? Five?
You want to make sure that our stories are the same. I think it was four or five, yeah.
Great. And how has it been working with Darcy since, and are you looking forward to coming to Juneau?
Oh, it's been incredible. I'm really grateful for all the work that Darcy's put into this. And I love being in Juneau. I love your community. I love the sense of companionship I feel up there and the eagerness of people to really kind of live the life of that they value, reach out and connect with each other.
Well, thank you. So tell us a little bit about nonviolent communication and how it became important in your life.
Nonviolent communication, unfortunately, the title can be pretty off-putting. I think of it as just a kind of an orientation for me on how do I live according to the values, according to the things that are most important to me. And it's a process that helps me really understand in any given moment what is important and how do I know that and how do I then reach out and hear what's important for another person and how do I help create systems on the planet, systems in our communities and in our prisons that help us live more according to our values and in a way that really helps us not harm each other, but feel more connected and collaborate.
I see. And I watched the beginning of your TED Talk on your website this morning, and I noticed that you were inspired by the Freedom Project. You went into a prison and were able to communicate with some inmates there. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, the Freedom Project is an organization that brings nonviolent communication and mindfulness into Washington State prisons. And I've been going into the prisons for about a dozen years and working with the men and women there and seeing amazing, incredible, inspiring stories of how they're transforming their lives by getting clear about what's important to them and then living from that place.
Okay. So these workshops are going to be, Darcy, on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at UAS, right?
At UAS, yep, at the Egan Library.
Okay. And I was just going to ask, maybe both of you can help us understand what they're going to look like. What are some things that people might gain from these?
I'll defer to Kathleen on that.
Okay.
Great. Happy to jump in. I think the intention is just to support stronger ties between people in the community, especially across the age or the generational differences. And so we're really hoping that there'll be high school and college and young adults and older adults all in the room together. And so we can look at some of the key pieces on how do we bring about more understanding and trust and move into a place of our relationships where there's more ease and fun. And then how can we make those little shifts in our communication so that that can happen on a daily basis?
All right. And Darcy, did you want to add to that?
Well, I was going to say that Friday, you know, from 6:30 to 9, it's going to be kind of an introduction to compassionate communication, kind of setting the foundation. And then Saturday will be skill building, you know, what is this? How can you use this in your life? And that goes from 9 to 5. And then on Sunday, it's more of a deepening of the skills, and it'll be more about conflict resolution and mediation, and that's 1 to 5. But there's a prerequisite. You have to come to the class on Saturday in order to come to Sunday.
Okay. Darcy, what about this resonates with you? What are a few things maybe that you've gleaned or learned from your time studying these practices?
I've always been interested in communication, but I've also been kind of conflict avoidant.
Right.
And having a different way, a framework to view a conflict has really made me less frightened of that and more effective in communicating. And I think that that has really broadened up my world and also my empathy and compassion for other people.
Interesting.
As well as myself.
Interesting. Interesting. Anything that you would like to add to that, Kathleen?
Yeah, I think that I'd love people to know that I'm bringing a colleague of mine, Gerald Finkelstein, up. And both of us are really passionate about making sure that workshops are not lecture-based, but people have a chance to interconnect with each other, and they'll have some hands-on interaction and a lot of practice. And then there's also lots of choice for people to participate at their own comfort level. But wanted to be clear, it's a place where we can go and learn skills and explore what's important and then take those skills with us as soon as we walk out the door and use them with families and in the workplace and with oneself.
Okay. Corey, or Darcy, excuse me, will you remind me what time the workshop starts on Friday?
6:30, and it goes to 9.
All right.
And it's in UAS Eagan Library, the classroom 219.
Okay. And you said Saturday is 9 to 5, is that
9
correct?
9 to 5, yeah.
Okay. And Sunday is?
1 to 5.
And those last two, Saturday and Sunday, those are in the room 221, is that correct?
Yeah, that's the Glacier View room.
All right. If somebody wanted to get more information on all of this, how should they do that, Darcy?
They contact me. Email is probably best. And my email is darcyl@gci.net. So that's spelled darcyl@gci.net.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Darcy Lockhart, for being on the show today. Kathleen McFerrin, thank you. And we're looking forward to having you up in Juneau.
Thank you so much, Scott.
Have we missed anything either of you would like to add?
Just that we invite people to come and play with us.
Yes, definitely.
All right. Take care, you two. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
This is Bird Note. Just a couple of dozen miles off the Pacific coast, immense dark birds with long saber-shaped wings glide without effort above the wave tops. These graceful giants are black-footed albatrosses, flying by the thousands near the edge of the continental shelf. Albatrosses arc and coast over the ocean for hours with hardly a flap of their wings, making the most of wind currents and shifts in air pressure. These wondrous seabirds seem to levitate over the water. Black-footed albatross numbers peak off the coast in summer. Many adults return to the Hawaiian Islands during our winter and spring to court and nest on sandy islands. In Hawaiian waters, the black-footed albatross collects squid and masses of flying fish eggs with its long, hook-tipped bill. Adult birds may fly hundreds of miles at sea to provide food for the single Goliath nestling, which looks more than a little like a portly, gray, recumbent version of Big Bird. The writers of Bird Note include Bob Sundstrom, Ellen Blackstone, Todd Peterson, Dennis Paulson, and Francis Wood. You can come to our website, birdnote.org, and read their scripts anytime. I'm Michael Stein.
Disability myth. People with mental illness are violent and unpredictable. Fact. The vast majority of people who experience mental health needs are no more violent than anyone else. Mental illness affects almost every family in the United States. October is Disability Awareness Month. Know the facts, dispel the myths. This message brought to you by Juneau Alliance for Mental Health and Southeast Alaska Independent Living.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon here on Monday, October 20th, 2014. Scott Burton, your host. And I am proud to have KXLL Music Director Jesse Herman in the studio with me now. Jesse, how are you?
I'm great.
KXLL check-in, sister station. How are things going over there?
Awesome. Lots of stuff happening in the works. It's October, so that means it's Halloween month, and we have our fourth annual KXLL Night of the Living Local Zombie Walk coming up this Saturday. It's
nice.
A huge event. It's really picked up steam the past 3 years, and we're hoping this year will be bigger and most fun ever. It's going to be held at Cote Park this year. Okay. We had a location change. And so this year it's this Saturday, the 25th, 8 p.m. at Cote Park. And we're going to start off there. We're going to hang out, go over the after party, talk about the route. We're going to take a picture. I'm hoping to get like a group picture of all the zombies. They'll be lit up. It'll be awesome. And then zombies are going to stagger downtown, usually keeping them their hands to themselves. And we'll probably take a picture in front of the Capitol building, which is always fun. Zombies take over the Capitol building.
Wow.
And then stumble downtown to the Gold Town Nickelodeon, where we're going to be having a fun after party. Gold Town Nickelodeon, super awesome. We're going to be showing super secret fan favorite zombie movie. We've got a couple shorts. I don't know if you're familiar with, I think it's called Zombie Love. It was in the Jump Society Film Fest a couple of years ago, nice. But it's a local zombie movie film by Paul Dizdier that we're going to be showing. A couple other shorts from local filmmakers, and then dances to some zombie tunes. Alaskan Brewing Company is going to be pouring beer there. It is an all-ages event, so there will be a beer garden crossed off. We've got prizes, so raffle door prizes, and then also for best zombie costumes, whatever that will be, from Alaska Robotics. We've also got ticket giveaways included in that. So there's a couple movie premieres coming up, movie premieres, and we're giving away tickets to TGR's premiere of Hire coming up as a prize for costume, and then also to a set of tickets to Snowvember series coming up.
Nice.
And then Alaska Robotics has donated Walking Dead comics, which is really huge. I'm sure everybody watched that last night. So anyways, it's going to be a really awesome party. That's this Saturday.
And this is the fourth annual, right?
Fourth annual, yeah.
So it's gone really well in the past. Why do people like zombies so much?
There's a lot of discussion and talk about that. I think, you know, zombie culture is really blown up. And I think, you know, culture, socially, I think there's a lot of mindsets of people find apocalyptic scenarios appealing for whatever reason, and I think there's a deep rooted culture there, and to really go into details about that, I don't know if I could get into the politics of it,
sure.
I think a lot of people are interested for lots of different reasons, but it's definitely a phenomenon. Everybody can agree that zombie culture has blown up in the past couple of years.
It really has. How many people would you say participated last year in the zombie walk, give or take?
Probably almost like 150 people or something, which is kind of a lot of zombies, like walking all at once.
I was trying to think if I could, without pulling a muscle, like pull off the zombie walk all the way from Cote Park to downtown. Like,
you could.
People pull it off.
Yeah, people really get into the mood, and they drag their foot and they make noise, and yeah, people really get into character and play up the zombie.
I always wondered if, like, a tourist happened to be in town that day, and they're like, oh, honey, let's go out for a walk, you know, but let's go check out the governor's.
I think that's what happens, and it's actually just as fun watching the zombies as watching people's reactions. Cars will drive by and just stop and watch, and they're, like, they're scared, and you see kids and lots of people taking pictures. It's definitely a fun event just to, like, watch if you're not going to participate
All right, and so this event starts at 8 p.m. this Saturday.
This Saturday at Cote Park, yeah.
All right, and then all those fun movies and prizes to cap off the evening.
At the Gold Town Nickelodeon at 9.
Town. All right, but next, the weekend after that, you have another cool
That's
event
right, we've got
that.
Another amazing event happening. It's Festival of the Three Skulls. We're proud to partner up with Playboy Spaceman. There's going to be a music fest, so three groups, three artists, three bands, whatever you want to call them. So the Glad People, which is Bridget Kuhar and I believe George, and she's doing her own kind of solo thing, but really dreamy, really cool, really like experimental music that Juno needs to hear. And then Silver Jackson, who you're familiar with.
Yeah, Nick Glennon.
Yeah, he's a really talented Sitka artist.
Absolutely.
And he's going to be in town playing some music. He's got his own album as well. And then Playboy Spaceman. And it's going to be pretty awesome. I don't know if you were at the last Playboy Spaceman concert, but it was huge. We packed out the Rockwell.
And where'd you get the idea for Three Skulls?
I can't take credit for that. That was actually George's idea. But probably the three, you know, three artists, three acts, three skulls. Something along the lines.
Yeah, and Halloween-inspired Day of the Dead kind
of. Day of the Dead, that's right.
Yeah.
In celebration of that. So it's going to be November 1st upstairs at the Rockwell Ballroom, 8:30. Ticket sales ahead of time are going to be at kxl.org.
Right on. Well, it sounds like fun. Go to KXLL Facebook page or go to kxll.org for more information. Music director Jesse Herman, anything else you'd like to add?
Tune in to KXLL.
Absolutely. 100.7. I have right here, I think, a song you'll think is hip, I hope.
Hip, I bet.
Are you ready?
Yeah. Tomorrow on a Juno afternoon, Ken Fix will host. We'll talk with organizers behind the upcoming Chocopalooza. We'll find out about next weekend's Mendenhall Flying Lions barbecue with guest Neil Atkinson. Hillary Young will be here to talk about the school district's Sources of Strength program. Plus, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more Tuesday at 3 on KTOO News. If you missed a Juno afternoon or want to hear it again, you can find it in the local programs link on our homepage, ktoo.org. Tonight, rain showers diminishing in the evening. Patchy fog late, lows around 41. Southwest wind 10 miles per hour, becoming east late. Stay tuned now for All Things Considered.